Straight Talk on WRHI is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks to Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Well, by golly, we have across from us the brand spanking new, or maybe not so new. Anyway, you, the historian for the Cultural and Heritage Museums, Zach Lemhouse, and we're here today to talk about some interesting stuff that's happening in conjunction with the National Park Service Network. Cool. All right, so Zach, this is your first time on Straight Talk, right?
It is, yes, sir.
All right. He has a nice bow tie. Haven't seen a bow tie on a young guy. You know, this old guy over here used to wear bow ties all the time, but he's, you know, he doesn't wear them anymore. So tell us a little bit about Zach.
Well, Zach was born and raised here in York County. I was a public school teacher for 5 years. I taught with York School District 1. I taught South Carolina history to eighth graders, and that's where the bow tie came into play. I started wearing the bow ties every day when I would come in to teach, and my students got a kick out of it, and it's a habit I have not been able to break.
Good for you.
About 2 years ago, I left teaching, and I joined the Culture and Heritage Museums of York County. I am their staff historian. And for your listeners that aren't familiar with the Culture and Heritage Museums, we're a family of four museums here in York County, two of which are here in Rock Hill. Of course, we have the Natural History Museum that we call the Museum of York County. And then we have the Main Street Children's Museum here in Rock Hill.
Which is finally reopened?
It has reopened, absolutely. And if you're not familiar with the Children's Museum, it's a museum for young people where it focuses on play-based learning, very interactive stuff.
They had a pipe that burst here a couple of years ago, flooded the whole downstairs area, and it ruined the whole exhibit. I mean, ruined it. And with all the insurance jockeying and what have you, it took way too long to get all that resolved, and it was shut down for a couple of years.
It took some time, but we are very happy that it is up and running again and open, fully open to the public. So please come out. If you've been waiting to get back in there and see it, if you have young kids, please come out and visit us at the Children's Museum there on Main Street in Rock Hill. Then, of course, we have Historic Brattonsville, which is an 800-acre historic site in McConnell's. And then where my office is, the McKelvey Center campus, about a block away from the courthouse there in the city of York.
I tell you what, that McKelvey Center, you know, they have one of the nicest auditoriums in there. I've been there for a couple of concerts and meetings and what have you. It seats, I don't know, 500 or 600 people. Very intimate, great space. Great sound and acoustics and what. It's just a great place to hang out.
The Lowry Family Theater there at the McKelvey Center is, you're right, it's an absolutely wonderful venue and facility.
All right. So before we get sidetracked on that, let's talk a little bit about this whole business about the National Park Service and, I guess, with Brattonsville and what's going on with that. So tell me first, what is this all about?
Yes.
What is this network to begin with?
So it's the National Underground Railroad Network to Freedom Program, and it is an initiative of the National Park Service. It coordinates nationwide preservation and education efforts to tell the many stories of freedom seekers being enslaved African Americans who didn't wait for emancipation. They took it upon themselves, they risked it all, their lives in a lot of cases, to escape from bondage, and we were able to identify at Historic Brattonsville four freedom seekers, four enslaved African Americans that lived and worked on the Bratton Plantation who were able to escape.
So when you talk about that, now you have to understand this plantation goes back a long, long, long time
ago.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you've got records as to when this thing actually came into being.
Absolutely, yeah. I'd be happy to talk a little bit about the Bratton Plantation. Yeah, so the Brattons arrived in York County around 1766, and they established a house there. Brattonsville, as we know it today, is named after the patriarch of the family. His name was Colonel William Bratton. He was a Revolutionary War colonel. And there's actually a battle that took place near his house on his neighbor's plantation, the plantation of James Williamson. It was a Revolutionary War battle, and that battlefield is part of our 800 acres today. So if you come out and visit Brattonsville, you can tour the original battlefield of the Battle of Williamson's Plantation, also known as the Battle of Huck's Defeat. William Bratton, we know that he had some enslaved people at the time of the American Revolution in 1780 during the Battle of Williamson's Plantation. One in particular, his name was Watt. According to family tradition, when the British arrived at the colonel's house, the colonel was not home. He was about 20 miles away camping with Thomas Sumter's Patriot Militia here at the Catawba River. And according to family tradition, Martha, William's wife, who was present at the house when the British arrived, she sent Watt, an enslaved African-American boy, with a message for her husband informing him that the British were there at the plantation. So we know through those records and those stories that William Bratton had at least some enslaved people at the time of the Revolution, and he will continue to acquire more until his death in 1815. We know that when the first United States census was taken in 1790, we know he had about a dozen enslaved African Americans living and working on the plantation, and that number will nearly double after the invention of the cotton gin in 1793.
All right, so of those slaves that were on the Brattonsville plantation, how many of them would have been what you called freedom seekers?
So through historic research, I've been able to identify four. Now, arguably, there are most likely more than four, and that's where continued research comes in. As historian, I will continue to do research to try to identify more freedom seekers.
So when you say researchers, I mean, where do you find in this information?
Absolutely.
Through old diaries or something?
The primary place that I've been able to find information on these freedom seekers comes from newspapers. Huh. Because when an enslaved person escaped, it was common practice back in the 19th century, that would be the 1800s, to place an advertisement in the newspaper. The enslaver, the person that owned these enslaved African American people, these freedom seekers, they would place this ad in the newspaper with the hopes of getting them back. Runaway slave advertisements is kind of what they referred to. So I was able to find a couple runaway slave advertisements for, in this case, specifically for a guy named Bob and a guy named Henry. So that was instrumental in helping me identify them.
So you got Bob, you got Henry, you got Watt?
So Watt was not a freedom seeker.
He was not a freedom seeker.
Watt was enslaved on the plantation, and we know that Watt died on the plantation. Okay. And we know this because Colonel Bratton actually had a tombstone made for Watt. Exceedingly uncommon for enslavers to pay the money to have these intricately carved tombstones for their enslaved after they die. But Watt did get one, it kind of alludes to the fact that perhaps he did deliver this message to Colonel Bratton that the British were there.
So who were the other two?
Yeah, so we've got Bob. Like I said, I identified him through a newspaper article, advertisement. We've got Lewis. Lewis was not identified through a newspaper advertisement. He was actually identified through court proceedings. Lewis was enslaved by John Simpson Bratton Jr., which was the youngest son of, what was one of the sons of John Simpson Bratton Sr., the man that made the large homestead house out there at Brattonsville.
Oh, yeah.
And when Lewis escaped, he found refuge with a local man named Abel Jonas. And when John Jr. discovered that Abel Jonas was harboring this fugitive slave, he sued him. And Abel Jonas ended up having to pay $200, $200 fine for harboring a fugitive slave, and ultimately had to return Lewis to John Bratton Jr. So I was able to identify Lewis through these court proceedings.
All right.
And then the final freedom seeker, his name was James Williams, and arguably we know the most about James Williams through a pension application that his wife submitted in the 1890s.
A pension application. From whom?
He served, so we know through this pension application that James Williams joined the Union Army. He escaped the plantation to join the Union Army during the American Civil War. And he served with the Union Army for 18 months in one capacity or another before returning to York County, where he became an active civil rights leader in the area. And after his death, James was ultimately murdered by the Ku Klux Klan, who was very active in York County in the years following the American Civil War. James was murdered by the Ku Klux Klan on March 7, 1871. And then, like I said, in the 1890s, his widowed wife, Rosa, applied for a federal pension as the widow of a Union soldier. Unfortunately, Rosa was ultimately denied her pension because she could not prove with any paper documents that her husband had ever served. Unfortunately, her house had burned down the year prior to applying for this pension, and any kind of official discharge papers or anything like that from the Union Army would have been destroyed in that house fire. So she had to rely on depositions, testimony from people close to her that knew her and knew her husband to prove his service. And it's kind of lucky that we have these depositions, because this is where we learn a lot about who James Williams was as a person and about his escape in 1865.
Right, so you got Bob, you got Lewis, you got James.
And Henry.
And Henry.
Those are our four.
I got Henry. Got to get Henry in there. All right, so those are the four that you know now.
Absolutely.
But, you know, when you talk about going back through old newspaper records, first of all, where are you finding these old newspapers that go back that far?
Yeah, it's a very tedious process. Luckily, with modern technology, it makes it a little bit easier. You can find that a lot of these newspapers have been digitized and are available online. Sometimes they are behind a paywall. For example, if you're familiar with the website Ancestry.com, they have an arm of Ancestry.com called Newspapers.com. And, of course, if you have a subscription, and it's behind a paywall, but if you have a paid subscription to Ancestry, you can access Newspapers.com, where they have thousands of digitized newspapers. And what the benefit there is, I can do some keyword searching. For example, in this case, Bratton. If I do a keyword search for Bratton, and I can narrow it down by the time period I'm looking at, it makes it easier than if I were doing it the old-fashioned way, which would be flipping through microfilm. Uh-huh. Now, that being said, Henry was identified in microfilm. Henry's newspaper, the newspaper that his ad was in, was not digitized.
So what was the local newspaper back in the 1700s around here?
So in the 1800s, which is where, just to clarify, the majority of the, or all of the, freedom seekers that I've been able to identify escaped sometime in the 19th century. That would be the 1800s.
Prior to the Emancipation Proclamation.
In James Williams's case, after the Emancipation Proclamation, he escaped, because he escaped in 1865. But the Yorkville Inquirer was a very popular newspaper in this area in the 19th century, the 1800s. But the precursor to the Yorkville Inquirer was a newspaper called the Yorkville Miscellany. And the Yorkville Inquirer, those are all digitized. I have access to those through newspaper.com. But the Yorkville Miscellany, the precursor to the Inquirer, that's not been digitized. So I had to physically go through microfilm copies of the Yorkville Miscellany to find Henry's ad. And I am confident that if given the time, as I continue my research through these microfilmed copies of the Miscellany, I very well may find more freedom seekers. And in that case, I'll add it to the body of research that I've been currently working on.
So you spend most of your time reading old newspapers and going through depositions.
That's my job, Manny. Whoa, I love it.
Brother.
I love it.
Isn't that something? I can remember my old days of doing title searches before they had everything done electronically, and I used to pull out these old books. I would start sneezing my head off because of all the dust that came out of them. So anyway, you're lucky you're in the digital world. So you've got these freedom seekers. All right. So once you found out that we actually had some freedom seekers from the Brattonsville Plantation, that's when you decided to hook up with this national network?
Absolutely, yes. So it would the National Underground Railroad Network to Freedom program was actually brought to my attention by a lady named Dr. Lisa Bratton. And Dr. Lisa Bratton is a descendant of enslaved African Americans that lived and worked on the Bratton plantation. So she has a vested interest in this, and we have partnered with Dr. Bratton on numerous occasions in the past, as well as other African-American descendants, for projects like this. So Dr. Bratton brought this program to my attention, And I jumped at the opportunity to do some research into an area that prior to this we hadn't looked into before. We hadn't looked into the possibility of freedom seekers. So I did the research. I drafted the application, and I worked closely with Dr. Bratton throughout the process. I actually sent her the application and had her review it. And I also worked closely with representatives from the Network to Freedom, African-American representatives that work with the National Underground Railroad Network to Freedom and work closely with potential applicants.
So when did you file this application?
Oh, I filed it several months ago.
And you've already gotten a yes on it?
Mm-hmm. We got a yes on it, yeah. So earlier this year, we were accepted. And we were probably accepted in January.
Okay.
So when I say several months ago, late last year is when I began the process, I guess. Late 2019, early 2020, we were wrapping up. Late 2020, early 2021, we were wrapping up the submission process. And we were accepted earlier this year. There was a big announcement from the White House for the inductees what they're calling the 41st round of accepted listings. We were one of 16 sites that were accepted on this most recent round, the 41st round. One of 16. And we were announced earlier this year. And we're very excited to be a part of it. As members of the Network to Freedom, we have the possibility of coordinating with other sites across the country. It's very exciting.
Because we've got to figure out what all this means. All right, but before we do that, we're going to take our mid-program break. Remind you that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. You can find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks to Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care. Find out more about them online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. You can find out more about Substation 2 right here by listening to this program, because we're going to tell you all about fresh subs and salads and how they're prepared here at Substation 2 6 days a week from 10 a.m. until 8 p.m. The magic letters are here in white. We're going to say them together as a unit. 1, 2, 3. Slice. Garden. Not bad. We got to pick up the tempo back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
Hey, Alex, have you tried that new pastrami on rye at Substation 2?
You're darn right I have, and you should too. It's freshly sliced, lean, delicious, served hot, and piled high. And I understand you better hurry because it's a limited time offer.
Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Save on your monthly mortgage payment with a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage from Founders Federal Credit Union. Take advantage of low rates while they're still around, and you'll also have no private mortgage insurance costs. The application process is easy, and your mortgage is serviced completely by Founders and always stays with us. Relax your home. For more, visit foundersfcu.com/30. Membership qualification required. Credit evaluation, underwriting requirements, terms and conditions apply. Institutions, NMLS identifier number 410-64.
When your health needs attention, you'll find compassionate care at Piedmont Medical Center. We make it convenient to treat emergencies with online check-in and locations in Rock Hill and Fort Mill. Or if you live with a heart condition, our cardiologists provide advanced treatment options to help you live better. And for pain that slows you down, a minimally invasive surgery can help speed you on to recovery. We are your community built on care.
PiedmontMedicalCenter.com.
Water, fire, mold, and storms cause property damage every day. When it happens to you, it's no time for second best. That's why insurance professionals trust the locally owned and family-run Paul Davis Restoration of Rock Hill. This is Gina Rogers. Paul Davis is committed to providing extraordinary care while serving our neighbors in their time of need. Our team is highly qualified and trained to handle each situation with care and professionalism. When disaster strikes, call Paul Davis. We are here to help. 329-1140 or pauldavisrockhill.com.
Hey, Alex, have you tried that new pastrami on rye at Substation 2?
You're darn right I have, and you should too. It's freshly sliced, lean, delicious, served hot, and piled high. And I understand you better hurry because it's a limited time offer.
Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2. Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Zach Lemhouse is with us today. He's the historian with the Cultural and Heritage Museums. He replaced a really good fella who's not with us any longer, Michael Scoggins. And I know you knew Michael.
I did, and I hesitate to use the word replaced because there's no replacing Michael Scoggins. He was truly a brilliant guy and did a lot for us. But trying to follow in his footsteps, pretty big shoes to fill.
By the way, I was telling Zach, you know, if you really wanted to hear somebody who had worked a long, long time, his whole life on the history of your county, you can go back to WRHI.com and on the Straight Talk page, just key in his name, you know, Michael Scoggins, and all the shows that we did with him over the years will pop back up, and he was something. He was quite something. All right, so we've got these four freedom seekers that you put in the application. You've now been accepted into the National Park Service Network for Freedom program and the Underground Network and all that kind of stuff. So what does all this mean? What's going to happen as a result of this?
Yeah, sure. So we get an opportunity to collaborate with other sites just like us from across the country.
And how many of those were there?
That are, like I said, there are currently 680 sites across our country that are on the Underground Railroad Network to Freedom.
Golly day.
It's a lot of sites, so we're definitely happy to be a part of that. There are opportunities for grant funding. Occasionally, the Network to Freedom will offer offer grants that we can apply for, specifically for interpretation at our site. If we wanted to do an exhibit or something to interpret these four freedom
seekers, tell their story.
Tell their stories, absolutely. So there's potential grant funding. Right. They don't offer it consistently every year, but occasionally they will offer potential grants. So that's an option open only to members of the Network to Freedom. And it gives us an opportunity to use National Park resources. For example, we just got two boxes of about 200 booklets from the National Park Service that tell the story of the Underground Railroad, and they're for kids. It provides activities and games and things they can do. So we get resources similar to that that we can hand out to our visitors when they come and visit us at Historic Brattonsville.
All right. Now, you were telling me during the break that, in fact, you've already created or are in the process of creating the story of one of these people, James Williams.
Absolutely.
So tell me about that.
Yeah. I'll tease our exhibit that is coming up. This exhibit, to clarify, is not a Freedom Seeker exhibit, but it is an exhibit that will prominently feature Captain James Williams, the fourth Freedom Seeker that we've been discussing today.
Didn't know he was captain.
He was a captain.
Didn't know
that. We can get into that. Yeah. So this exhibit, which will be in our brick house, as we call it, at Historic Brattonsville, which has been recently renovated, it will tell the story of Reconstruction in and around York County. And it will prominently feature James Williams and his story. Reconstruction, for the listeners that don't know, is the time period following the American Civil War from 1865 to 1877. It was a very tumultuous time, especially for African Americans who were getting new rights granted to them with the 14th Amendment, which gave them citizenship, rights granted in the 15th Amendment, which gave African American men the right to vote. And as you can imagine, as African Americans began to get more and more political power, more and more rights,
right.
White Southerners, a lot of them who were former plantation owners, saw their power over them diminishing,
right.
And they formed groups, as you know, like the Ku Klux Klan. And during Reconstruction, violence was at a height here in York County.
Right.
So this exhibit will discuss this very tumultuous time, this very violent time, in our county's history.
And that's something. So the exhibit is up and operating right now?
The exhibit is not up and operating right now. We are in the final stages of the exhibit, and we hope to have it open in late November of this year. I can't give you a definitive date right now, but it should be open in late November. And like I said, it will tell the story of Reconstruction through the eyes of James Williams. And you mentioned captain, so I can clarify that. So
yeah.
James Williams, like I said, he was born in 1830 in York County. By the time of the Civil War, he was enslaved on the plantation of a guy named Samuel Rainey. Samuel Rainey was a neighbor to John Bratton Jr.
Okay.
And James Williams was rented to the Brattons for a couple years prior to the Civil War.
Rented.
He wasn't enslaved on the Bratton plantation. He was enslaved by the Brattons' neighbors, but he was working and living on the Bratton plantation.
So the Brattons paid the Raineys.
For James Williams.
All right.
And as I mentioned before our break, in 1865, James escaped. He is one of our freedom seekers. He escaped from the plantation and joined the Union Army. And he served for 18 months, and then he returned. And when he returned, he became an active civil rights leader in York County. What I mean by that is he spoke out very vocally against the Ku Klux Klan and their atrocities that they were perpetrating against newly freed African Americans. James was also appointed captain of a local state-established militia. The governor of South Carolina at the time, a guy named Robert Kingston Scott, he established local militias. Anyone between the ages of 18 and 45 could join these militias. And it didn't matter if you were white or black. But as you can imagine, white people at the time were hesitant to fight alongside, serve alongside black men in these militias. So they quickly became exclusively black. And James Williams was appointed captain of the Forest Hall Militia, which was a militia very close to Brattonsville. And the Ku Klux Klan did not take kindly to freed African Americans, especially armed freed African Americans. And James Williams quickly became a target. He was outspoken against the Klan. He was a civil rights leader, and he was a captain of this black militia. And they murdered him. The Klan murdered him on March 7th, 1871. His body was brought, after his murder, to the brick house at Brattonsville,
okay,
where the coroner, the York County coroner, conducted an inquest into his murder. And that's why we've chosen to tell his story and the reconstruction story at the brick house at Brattonsville, because that is actually where he was brought after his murder, where the coroner conducted that inquest. And James's story is truly nationally significant. After his murder, and due to the violence here in York County, the President of the United States, Ulysses S. Grant, will send federal troops under the command of a guy named Lewis Merrill to keep peace here in York County. And Merrill will conduct in-depth investigations into Klan violence. And these notes that he takes, this investigation that he does, becomes the backbone, the basis of prosecution against the Klan in what becomes known as the Great Ku Klux Klan Trials that were held in Columbia, where the national government was actually prosecuting Klansmen. James Williams, his murder case, was the second case heard at the trials in Columbia. And because of the nature of the case, the prosecuting attorneys decided to send it to the Supreme Court of the United States of America. That makes it the first case born of this Reconstruction time period, of what becomes known as the Enforcement Acts. It's the first case to make it to the Supreme Court of the United States, which is nationally significant. James Williams' case makes it to the Supreme Court of the United States. So ultimately, the Supreme Court decides not to rule on it, and it goes back to lower courts.
So is all of this somehow encapsulated on the museum's website about what you're doing and what we're talking about
so
here?
So all of it will be encapsulated in the exhibit,
right,
and I'm in the process of updating the museum's website as we speak. And it will include all of it. So James Williams' story is definitely on our website if you want to go to www.chmuseums.org.
Chmuseums.org. Okay.
James Williams' story is there. I think it's on a tab that says the African-American community. There's all sorts of information about the enslaved African-Americans that lived and worked on the plantation. And well, James's story is there. But I'm in the process of updating it a little bit.
All right, Zach, you've done a great job. You certainly look like a fire hydrant of information. Just, wow, that's great. Appreciate you being on here today. Zach Lemhouse, a historian with the Culture and Heritage Museums. And again, you can find out more about what's going on with this and other stuff at the museum, chmuseum.org. Is it museum or museum?
chmuseums.org.
Plural. Okay, got it.
And please follow us on social media.
All right. That's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, Relax Here with Founders, and by Anderson Graves Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. And, of course, we prepare fresh subs and salads 7 days a week here at Substation 2. If we can get the proprietor to be quiet and get over here so he can contribute to what we're about to do. At the count of three, one, two, three. Slice,
slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden.
Not bad. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.